Welcome to Real Talk with Oribi, where we tackle real problems with real people and discover real solutions. I'm your host, Munashid Zikiti, the Communications and Community Management Officer here at Oribi Incubator. And for those who aren't familiar with Oribi, Oribi is a nonprofit impact entrepreneurship incubator dedicated to driving social change in South Africa. Today, we're thrilled to have Miami Sogaka, Sine Starson, and Nolita January with us. Miami is a multifaceted individual with a passion for event management, news editing, and nature exploration. With a proven track record of excellence, Miami holds certificates from the Girls in Business program and has been recognized for leadership and exceptional speech skills. With a vision to establish her own business and develop innovative apps within the next 2 years, Miami is driven by a desire to make a positive impact in her community. Sine Starson is a designer, educator, STEAM activist, social entrepreneur, futurist, and the co-founder and CEO of Open Design Africa. She is a dot connector, systems thinker, and a doer. Sine is passionate about exploring and experimenting with new and diverse ideas that are purpose-driven, place-based, scalable, regenerative, and sustainable. While Nolita January is proudly serving as the Gender Impact Lead at Oribi. In her role, she's dedicated to championing gender equality and empowering women in all spheres of life. One of the most inspiring projects we are undertaking is Girls in Business. This program holds a special place in her heart as it optimizes our commitment to fostering the entrepreneurial spirit among young women. We have invited these ladies today to dive into conversation with us to share their expertise on the journey of a social entrepreneur. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
How are we doing today?
Very good.
Amazing.
Happy to be here.
Fantastic. Extremely happy and excited to have you ladies join us today. And before we dive too deep into the conversation, Sine, I know that you have been a longtime friend of Oribi, and this friendship has been built on sharing a similar value to Oribi, which is to nurture sustainable futures. And you've done some amazing work for us with structuring our Girls in Business program and hosting our masterclasses. And, you know, a pattern that we see, and I'm sure both yourself and Nolita can vouch for this, is that social entrepreneurship is a fairly new concept and is, you know, not everyone knows what it is and why it's important. And I believe, Sine, you're the best person to answer this question for us. You know, what is social entrepreneurship? What does it mean to be a social entrepreneur?
Sure. Love answering that question. A social entrepreneur is really someone that drives a business, but it's not only profit-driven.
Right.
It is a social entrepreneur, someone that really focuses on having a purpose. It's a purpose-driven business. It usually hooks itself onto a cause, might it be poverty, unemployment, youth development, something in that line. And so a social entrepreneur is actually playing a massive big role today because these are the entrepreneurs that's actually driving the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
Wow.
So if you look at the kinds of causes that the businesses are driving, might it be a social impact or an environmental impact? Very often it's both. These are usually tackling some of the biggest challenges that we face globally. So they have a very, very important role to play in this world.
Amazing. So it's essentially creating a positive impact in our communities and driving change.
I find that part so interesting because, you know, a lot of other businesses are all about making profit. Now, to be able to make profit, you need to create brand loyalty. Now, what better way to create brand loyalty when you are delivering, creating products and services and environments for people where they really feel cared for, that really impacts on people's lives, you know, where we add to our environment, creating a flourishing or nature to flourish, mm-hmm. where people can thrive. To me, that is the ultimate way of creating brand loyalty. Right. So I think the rest of the business world can actually learn a lot from social entrepreneurs.
Absolutely, 100% agree with that. And you know, I've had the pleasure of attending some of the talks you've hosted and spoken at, and I've learned that you're incredibly knowledgeable and passionate about sustainable futures. Mm. Tell us more about the work that you've done in this field.
So our company, Open Design Africa, is also a social enterprise for a very good reason. We love looking at the world through, first of all, through a design lens, understanding that we as the human species or human race, we are the creators of our man-made world. So everything in this world has been created by people. So if we kind of zoom out and we look at the world we have created to date, we, yes, can see it's a very destructive world. It's a very unjust world. But the way we look at these things is through a systemic lens, understanding that everything and everyone are connected. So when it comes to creating systemic change and sustainability and so on, systems thinking is, of course, a very important future skill. And to understand, and that means that when you're a systems thinker, you actually understand the bigger picture, but you have the ability to break that bigger picture up into smaller parts so that you can understand how these smaller parts work together right. to either successfully create the bigger picture, in our case, the world. Right. It's not working as well as it should be. But then I want to also step back and say, well, we're an intelligent species. Mm-hmm. And if we are capable of designing such a destructive and unjust world, yes. we are equally capable of designing the exact opposite. And this is where my, I guess, my optimism as a social entrepreneur comes in. It is possible, but mm-hmm. we need to understand this future that we want, where mm-hmm. people and nature can thrive and we create regenerative economies. So that's the kind of desired outcome we as the human race should sort of strive towards. So putting my design lens on and being a designer and understanding, you know, if you get a design brief, how do you interpret that design brief to create the desired outcomes? Mm-hmm. We now can step back and say, okay, if the human species is the designer of our man-made world, what does that mean if we want to create a different kind of future? Mm. And what are those smaller parts that we need to develop to be able to have that desired outcome? So, you know, all the projects that we do kind of play into that agenda. For us, there's a main global design brief, and that is that we are standing on the edge of the most important design brief in the history of mankind, and that is to design a thriving future for people and planet. Mm-hmm. So all our projects that we do kind of, you know, go into that same agenda. We have Girls Make the City project, where we work with teenage girls, well, not only teenage girls, from the age of 15 to 25, right. where we take them into their communities. But the most important part of that is we work with three pillars, mm. the power of place. Mm. So we work with the girls to understand, first to find their own voice and understand that they have the power within them as girls to actually create the change that they want to see.
Right.
Very often we need to encourage people and create an environment where they do find their voice and understand their power. So that's what we do through that project. And for them to also understand that the solutions they want to create, yet they will find in their own community. And I think that's what you mentioned earlier about place-based. It's right. very important to understand. It's the same way that nature works. Nature has all these very intricate ecosystems, but in nature, diversity gets rewarded with life. In our world, although we forget to acknowledge that we're part of nature, we make up our own rules, and in our world, diversity does not get rewarded. So You know, that place-based ecosystem to empower young people to understand first their own power. They can create the change that they want to create, but they need support. And I think that's where the rest of us come in to support, but never to come in to say and tell them what to do. They need to understand the power of their place, power of us, how to work together, and the power of doing, actually do it.
Right. Absolutely. And I mean, that's an extraordinary definition and background on, you know, the work that you do. I would like to understand, how does one get to a place where they commit themselves to saying, I want to be the change, I want to create change. So what inspired you to get into this field? Where did this all start?
There was a pivotal moment. It was in the early 90s, and I was still teaching design, and I was a bit on a journey of trying to explain to people the value and the power and the impact of design, and that it is far more than architecture and fashion and furniture, looking more at the real impact and how it can improve people's lives. But I was, on that day, I was in the company of a businessman. Thank goodness I can't remember his name. It was not worth remembering. But he really got very frustrated with me that day. So now remember, we're talking about early 90s, okay? It's a long time ago. There's a lot that changed since then. But I know that was very much a pivotal moment. He actually started shouting at me and said, you have no idea what you're talking about. That design has got no value to add to society. And here comes the special part of what he said, especially not in a developing country like South Africa. And that to me, and the kind of way I was already thinking then, you know, how if you use your creative intelligence, how that helps you to understand how to use your skills, your experience, your knowledge, how to apply that so that you can effectively respond to novel situations. If we think of COVID and we just think of all the destruction and, you know, everything that we are dealing with in the world, just imagine if everyone had that ability. So then when he told me that, I didn't say I will show you. I just understood at the time that there's a lot of education that needs to happen. And from that time, every single thing that I did started shaping this agenda that we spoke about earlier. And I think also because I come with my teacher hat to try and understand what is it that people then, that my question was, what is it that people don't understand about the importance of creativity? And I realized that so often we are our own enemies. We are our own enemy because, you know, in the engineering field and all our different sectors, you kind of use your industry jargon. If a scientist had to speak to me, I would probably lose him in the first few seconds. So the same for creative people. We talk about creativity, we use our industry jargon. And as soon as, especially people who don't understand the value of design or creativity in general, as soon as you start using your jargon on people, you lose them in the first second. And that was one of the first things I started to analyze, like, what is it? So it's language-based. How do you talk about the importance of something? You need to become aware of the language that you use, your word choice, to pull them in. So I started with an experiment and like, okay, so the way I understand design, why it is important, for instance, if you go to someone, you start a conversation and you say, did you know design protects us and gives us comfort. So now we're going straight down to the human level. What do we need? What do we need to be happy? Love, care, comfort, safety. So as soon as you start talking on that level, people listen.
It shows value.
You know, so like, okay, so no, I had no idea. What do you mean? And then it opens up the conversation to say, you know, this is what I mean by that. This is why it's important. And that changed the whole landscape. Even early on, it just changed the conversations. People were more likely to listen. I had more opportunity to explain and to get in. And so everything started being shaped from there. And then I had an amazing opportunity. Well, it was really a hard drive. also in the early 90s, we were a small group of design teachers that felt very strongly to get design as a school subject in schools.
Right.
At the time, we had no idea that South Africa was going to be the first in the world. You know, we always think that anyone from Africa is behind the rest of the world. So we were just doing our thing. We just thought it was a great idea. And yes, you have art at school, but what about design? And for us, we were very serious about getting design as a school subject because we saw that as an opportunity to develop entrepreneurs and innovators for the future. Right. And we strongly believed then, like we do believe today, that we need entrepreneurs and innovators for our country.
Yes.
To come up with better solutions, you know, to start driving and designing this better world. And it took us 9 years, nine very long years, to knocking on the National Department of Basic Education. And eventually that door opened. We developed the first curriculum for high school as a subject choice. There weren't any textbooks available. Anyway, long story short, eventually, I got involved in also developing, with an amazing team, the first textbooks, grade 10, 11, and 12, and teacher manuals. Now, this is where that, you know, if you can see the steps of okay, let's change the youth's idea about what design is. We create the subject, but the subject, of course, deals with architecture and fashion and all of that, but the idea is not to develop architects or fashion designers at a school level. It was about teaching them how to think, how to use their imagination, making them aware of sustainability. We even, in grade 10, already deal with biomimicry, understanding how nature's design works. And at the time we had, like I said before, we had no idea that we were the first country in the world to do this. So that was a great achievement, but when I walked away and it was all done and I looked back, I realized, no, hang on, this is not inclusive enough because the subject is now going to attract kids who think they are creative only.
Right.
And understanding from an educator's angle the underlying skills you develop, which are the future skills we talk about today, those are the future skills, then you realize that every single child must have the opportunity to develop these skills. So what do we do now? There's the subject, great achievement, but now we need to take it a level up. And that's when we started Open Design, a public platform, a festival that was really aiming at the general public.
Amazing.
Getting them into these creative experiences and learning these future skills as they, you know, have fun and be with us. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah, can you imagine? It's amazing.
Very fulfilling journey.
Right.
Yes, very.
And I think for us, it's also just as mind-blowing to have someone who's played such a pivotal role in entrepreneurship history and creativity sitting with us today. I want to move on to you, Nolita. You know, you have played such an important role in assisting us with basically building our Girls in Business program and structuring it so that we are giving young entrepreneurs, particularly from underserved communities, the opportunity to learn and access economic or better economic opportunities. You know, before I move into more in-depth questions about the program, I'd love to hear more about what inspired you to join or to take on this gender impact lead role at RAB.
All right. Thank you so much, Monashe. It's a very, very, very powerful journey that I'm on as the gender impact lead. And I'm very privileged as well to see in real time the impact that this program is making on these young girls. And thanks to players like Sine, who have really designed the content for this program. And it just fits like a puzzle in these sessions that we have. So what inspired me to take on this very important role is my love for young people. I love young people. I've been a young girl before. You know, I've sat in these sessions. I always tell people that in the NGO sector, I wear three hats. The first hat I wear is that of having been a participant in this sector. I've been that girl. You know, I've been that girl in grade 10 and grade 8 who was always eager, you know, to get involved with NGO programs. And the second hat I wear is that now I transitioned from being that girl to being a facilitator for those girls. So then I wear that second hat. And I'm also happy that in my role as a gender impact lead, I've been able to also be the facilitator for phase two, which I'll get into later on. And then now I'm at a point where I am a program lead for these girls. So I sit and from a strategic lens, I'm able to plan for them. You know, I'm able to plan for the rollout of this program. So what inspired me is the fact that finally I could be able to live and survive in an environment where I can wear all of these three hats with ease. And you know, it's also a contribution. You know,
right.
It's also a contribution back into the sector that made me.
Right.
So I would say that is one of the reasons why I still find myself in the NGO sector and one of the reasons why I took on this role with both hands. It's really, I think it's powerful, the work we do.
One thing that we are very passionate about at RAB is having social entrepreneurship as a core value. And we believe that nurturing social entrepreneurship within the youth is incredibly important. I want to understand how the Girls in Business program has played a part in nurturing social entrepreneurship in our youth.
All right. So our girls go through, you know, this program, it has three phases. Right. So I'm going to take you through a journey where I explain exactly what's happening in each phase and the kind of girl we would like to have at the end of these phases. Unfortunately, as well, we do have that girl here with us.
Amazing.
Right? So I won't even touch that part. She'll get to it. Right. So our program, you know, is scattered into three different phases. The first phase, this is where we have the innovation boot camp. This is also where we start and do the recruitment talks.
Right.
So our team goes around schools in Cape Town, doing recruitment talks. What's happening in these recruitment talks? Young girls are being sensitized to the idea of gender equality, sustainable development goals. Mm. They are being sensitized to what is Oribi, and in Oribi, what is the Girls in Business program?
Mm.
So that is what's happening in the recruitment talks. We do this with our partners, Ikamva Youth, Amandla Development, and Open Design Africa as well, who, you know, develop our content. And then from there on, we transition into the second part of phase one, that being the innovation boot camps. This year, we had the innovation boot camps happening over 2 days. Now here, there is a reinforcement of what was happening in the boot camp, in the recruitment talks. So what is gender equality? How do you see it? How does it fit into your life? And what are your ideas around solving some of the problems you face in your community? They are taken through activities of identifying that, look, in my township, in my community, I see a problem. So flagging it. So the first day is basically flagging that problem, seeing the space in which you come from, right? And just getting into it. The second day then of these boot camps is to say that, okay, so what business might come out of these problems? What is your solution? We
right.
ask, what is your solution? You know, and then the whole theme of this phase is trust yourself.
Yeah.
So it's personal development of, yes, you see this problem, now what? Now trust yourself. Trust yourself through this problem. And then we get into phase two, where one of the very first things we are doing there is personal development. We realize that you need to work on the child first before the child is able to innovate and create. And so based on the fact that we are in, you know, we are in underprivileged areas, there are a lot of issues, right?
Right.
So we see personal development as one of the core components of this program,
right?
And then they are sensitized once more to social impact. You know, what is social entrepreneurship? What is sustainability? What is unsustainability? What is a product? And then all of these terms are explained through the master classes. And you know, the girls have really, really engaged with this content. And right throughout phase two, we are busy refining the solution that they came up with in phase one.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's trusting your idea. This is the theme, right? And so we move on. We go into phase three, where the likes of Miami have been part of that project process, where they've now pitched this idea at the end of phase two, and now it's implementation. Now they are behaving like businesses. Now it's time to procure your goods. It's time to procure now. Who are your partners? Who are your service providers, right?
Right.
Who are your service providers? So we treat them to now operate as a business. Where's your business plan? You know, where's your business plan? And all of these key components of a businesswoman. At the end of this, we want a businesswoman who is personally developed, but who's still embarking on a journey of personal development.
Right.
We want a businesswoman who understands the world that she lives in and sees problems but also identifies solutions. So our program is not centered around unpacking problems. It's also centered around unpacking and designing solutions for the problems, because they are active members of society. So in a nutshell, that is how I would explain the Girls in Business program to you.
Wow, that's amazing work that you guys have been doing. And I know your team has been working extensively and very, very hard to make this program possible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have another question to throw at you, and Sine, I would love your opinion on this as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a South African context, is it realistic to explore social entrepreneurship as a career avenue? I mean, it's a given that a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with accessing resources, let alone funding to start off or kick off their entrepreneurial journey. Is it realistic to explore social entrepreneurship as a career avenue? And what resources are being made available, maybe from a Girls in Business perspective, to make this journey easier for the entrepreneurs?
I think it is the most important thing for any young person to do right now, whether it's a boy or a girl or whatever the person identifies as. Social entrepreneurship is exactly what we should be all doing. I do feel that we start them too late. This is something that should be taught at, I don't know, preschool level already. You know, and it be, you know, given to them in a way that they understand. Right now in South Africa, young people account for 59% of our unemployed population.
Wow.
And if I went deeper into that, I could very well find that women, you know, are right at the bottom of those statistics, right? So we see women as the catalysts for development. Right? And if you were to go into a household, if I were to take you into a household and if you were to look at the role that women are playing in South African homes right now, you can also get out of that household and say, but why are we not playing that same role, you know, economically? Because we bring life.
Right.
We bring life. We nurture life, right? So why do we think that women cannot do the same thing in terms of business? So as ours is that these principles, this life that we are seeing in South African households, we want to see a replica of it economically. And we deserve to see that. Right? So this is why social entrepreneurship is so important, specifically for women as well, because we are homemakers. We make the world. We are the world, you know. We are powerful. We are empowered when we are empowered. So that would be, you know, a very good way to look at it, that it's the only breakthrough.
Right.
We are not going to be absorbed by the economy. I'm employed, but another woman might not have the same opportunity. So how might she be self-sufficient in her own corner?
Right.
Social entrepreneurship is the answer.
Amazing. And Sine, before I get your opinion, I just want to move to Miami and understand. I mean, you're fresh out of high school and you're now, you know, a woman of the world. You are exploring your economic opportunities that are accessible to you. And, you know, I mean, for me personally, going back to the stats that Nolita brought up earlier, saying that, you know, 59% of South African youth are currently unemployed. That was a massive challenge for me. Have you found, you know, your involvement in the Girls in Business program and, you know, accessing social entrepreneurship resources, has it in any way made it easier for you on your journey of seeking opportunities and going into the business world?
To answer you, yes, it has, honestly, because this opportunity, I wouldn't even get it at school, right? So my journey has been very hard to access things like information about social entrepreneurs, because there's a lot of subject at schools, remember that, right? So business is not being taught exactly the way that we should have been taught, you understand me? It's just 1, 2, 3 and then move to the next one. But here in Girls in Business, which is RIB, has taught us a lot, personal growth, you understand me? How to approach things using business tools and all that. So here at our Girls in Business, it's a lot that is being packed, honestly. There's a lot we need to teach, you know. There's a teaching that goes behind, there's master classes, everything. So I gained a lot, I'm not gonna lie, I gained a lot here in RIB.
Amazing. Yes. Fantastic. And Sine, I'd love to hear your opinion on this too. You know, I believe that to take on entrepreneurship, let alone social entrepreneurship, there's a level of creative intelligence that an entrepreneur is required to have in order to identify a problem and then come up with a solution. Do you believe that South Africa has done a good job at creating avenues and pathways for entrepreneurs to freely express this creative intelligence and access resources necessary to run a social entrepreneurship venture?
I think there's a lot we still need to do. I think, first of all, we need to educate people, because there's still a very strong belief that social entrepreneurs or a social enterprise is a charity or an NGO. People who want to invest in business and see growth, they want to see that the business is making a profit and so on, usually don't look at a social enterprise. Let's put it that way, because they see it still very much, and I think generally in public, people see it as a charity. And I think we need to, I think the best way to explain it is if I can use an example. And the example I'm going to use, I'm using for a good reason as well, to show how innovative people from Africa is. Let's say the cardiopath, and this might be an old example, but I think it's going to prove the point that I'm trying to bring across. So the cardiopath was designed in Cameroon.
Right.
And by a very young engineer called Arthur Zhang. He identified a problem, not just in his community, but in his country. People had, there was a very high rate of heart disease. So listen, I'm talking about medical tools here. I'm not talking about a charity, okay? And also in his own village where he was living, he could see how difficult it was for people that's living in rural areas where you don't have access to electricity. In other words, your medical tools and equipment that's designed for the first world cannot operate there, all right? So he decided, it was also a personal journey for him, because I think his uncle died because of heart disease. But he was driven. Again, there's the cause. He wants to improve. He wants to design something to help his people to be healthy, to be able to monitor their heart health, because there was a massive problem in their country. But in doing so, he eventually designed the very first medical tablet in Africa, something to be very proud of. But he designed a mobile, can we say, most people know the EKG machine, all right? Most heart rate heart rate monitors you needed electricity for it to work. The cardiopad is like an EKG machine where you can actually monitor somebody's heart health in a rural area, and you can be sitting in the city or in another country. So you are doing this remotely. Now, the beauty for me of this is we're talking about a medical tool. We're not talking about a charity. We're talking about a proper business here.
Right.
That's adding, now here comes the social and the environmental. Right. It's adding value to people's lives. The other equipment that was available, besides the fact that it needed electricity, usually materials that's used to design this kind of equipment for the first world, is not designed with strong material to withstand the rural and tough environments in rural areas. So it breaks easily. It's expensive to fix. So yes, the systems thinking I was talking about earlier as well. There's a little ecosystem. And so when you design something for developing countries, it needs to be robust, it needs to be, you know, made from materials that are really strong, it needs to be working without electricity. But ultimately, Arthur designed the cardiopad because he wanted to find a solution in his own country. This same piece of equipment is now also of value in the first world countries. It makes it possible for those doctors to actually evaluate and look after the heart health of their patients remotely. So the interesting thing for me about South Africa and the rest of Africa, and we can also add the other developing countries to this conversation, is that people coming from developing countries are naturally entrepreneurial. A lot of them, there's a lot of necessity entrepreneurs, for instance, in Africa, but we need to find a way to transform them into opportunity entrepreneurs. So when it comes to social entrepreneurship, and we think about the impact every business in this world should be making, improving people's lives, adding value to the environment, and making a profit. We're talking about the triple bottom line here. That's been something that's been a buzzword many years ago, and people said, oh, stop talking about the triple bottom line. But at the end of the day, the triple bottom line, people, planet, economy, it doesn't matter if it's a social impact business or what kind of business. We all should be creating businesses that not only creates profit, but also add real value to people's lives and to the environment. Mm. And for me, there should not be a difference anymore. Absolutely. I think that's a very hard lesson we have learned, or should be learning, if we kind of zoom out and you look at the world, this destructive, unjust world that we have created is because of these other businesses. So for me, that I think there's a lot of education that needs to happen. And it's quite interesting to also see, you know, when we teach, I think education in general is important, yes, but also at the tertiary level, the engineers we're teaching, the designers we're teaching, the business people we're teaching, this kind of way of thinking about the world and looking through these different lenses, we need to start teaching young people to think and do in this way so that we can start creating different types of businesses that has real value to add. There's no reason for the cardiopad not to make good money, because that piece of medical equipment can now save lives anywhere in the world where there's rural areas and they have the same challenges. And that's a very big thing that I think we're also trying to teach our girls through this Girls in Business journey.
Right.
Is to understand that, yes, think local, find a solution for a local challenge, but we need to teach them to think global. If you can understand that the solution you're coming up with now, but you understand that, and that's one of the exercises I will be doing with them in the second masterclass coming up, is where else in the world, might it be in Cape Town or in the rest of South Africa, and then we can go bigger. Teach them to think bigger and to already understand the scalability of their business. Because somewhere else in the world, there will be people dealing with the same challenge. The reason for the challenge might be different, the environment will be different, but the same challenge. So when we can teach young girls to come up with solutions that's flexible enough so that when it scales, it can easily be adopted by other communities. Then we are teaching them to think global and to understand the scalability of their business. And that's how we're going to start growing entrepreneurs, entrepreneurial businesses in Africa. We've got so much to give to the rest of the world. We have a very special way of looking at challenges and coming up with solutions. And we've got, therefore, a lot of value to add to the rest of the world and a lot of these challenges that we're struggling with globally.
I absolutely agree. Thank you so much for that insight. And Miami, I think you're the perfect person to give us feedback, you know, from your personal experiences in the entrepreneurial field and world. You know, you enrolled in the Girls in Business program and you received seed funding to kickstart the business. Since completing the program, have you experienced any challenges starting your business? And maybe before getting into that, tell us a bit more about the business that you're running through the Girls in Business program.
Okay, before I delve much into that, I would like to start by saying without a sustainability, there is no there's no start, right? Mm. And without a commitment, there is no finish. I would also like to say, instead of saying, I promise, how about you say, I commit myself to do this? Mm. Because when you keep on promising, you end up depressing yourself because you're like, oh, I promise that I will do this. But if you committed yourself, it's something that drives you every time when you wake up. You'd be like, yes, I committed myself that I'm going to do that. So let me get up and go and do it. That's the commitment. So I committed myself into GIB. I am really committed because I see opportunities. I don't see problems. Mm. I see opportunities. That's what I'm being taught, is to see opportunities. Don't see it as a problem, because your problems can find itself its solution. So that's what I have seen. That's what I've gained here in RIB. Where I am right now, I am planning to start opening my business, right, where I develop apps for school learners, targeting age from 5 years old to 16 years old. Mm. It's a school app, specifically school app, where it's for everyone, even the local people, right? Right. Yes. Which is, I'm planning to launch it next year, because right now I'm still need to attach into a few things. And I want to open a podcast. Mm. I wanted to have my own podcast where I discuss the importance of social entrepreneurship, because this is where I am. And I am a youth. I'm a young youth. And I have seen a lot here outside that youth are more into things that are not valuable, that are not adding value in their lives. Mm. And when they grow up, they start to complain, they start to like cry for themselves. They say, I so wish back then I would have done this. So I want to change that. I want youth to open their eyes, see the world better. It says, if you want the world to be a better place, be better to the world. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. what you say with your mouth is what you will get. Mm-hmm. It's the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. So if you say that, oh, I can't be that person, then you won't be that person. Mm-hmm. It's the law of attraction. Remember that. Mm-hmm. So I told myself that I want to be a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. I want to build jobs for youth, because I see power in youth. It's so funny that I am now complaining about the youth, even though I am a youth. Honestly speaking, I see power. Amazing. I see creativity, and I see people who will bring this economy into a better place. But wow. In order for you to have a better world, you must be better to the world. Absolutely. The world needs us as youth. So that's what that's what driven me mostly. And podcast, apps. I just want to create jobs. What drives me is the people. That's what I've seen. It's what drives me. I wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to be a doctor. But all the things, it's not me. It's not in me. It's that me. Helping people, it's what in. So amazing. That's why I am here. And there's far. I'm going far, honestly. You guys see me. Fourth floor, I don't know which floor I'll be, but I'll be a CEO, right? I'll be a CEO. So yes, so that's where
amazing. I am. And what resources, or what are some key resources you require in order to succeed as a young female and black entrepreneur?
So the resources that I'm actually need the most, I'm also studying software developer. I forgot to mention that. So I need a tuition fee support, transportation, resources like laptops and cameras to start my own business, because I need to capture my businesses, you know. I need to have a project where I keep them safe, and like I show them to people, this is what this is my evidence, this is the proof. Because when you talk, people don't believe in talk. They believe in to see it, evidence. So that's what I really need, and I would appreciate that help.
Amazing. And you mentioned tuition. I mean, when we started working on the Girls in Business program, our goal was really to ensure that we give young women, particularly again from underserved communities, access to economic opportunities. Yes. You know, and besides entrepreneurial challenges, what additional support and resources do you believe girls from underserved communities need to succeed? You mentioned tuition as one. After high school, what are some things you've noticed that you've needed in your life that might be relevant to other girls out there in order for you to succeed, not just in entrepreneurship, but for you as Miami, the human being?
Mostly are the skills. When you have skills, I'm not gonna lie, when you have skills and you know how to use them, it's the goal. For an example, you want to be a manager, you want to be an event manager. To become an event manager, you have to be creative. You have to come up with solutions that would not only benefit you, but will benefit the whole people, even for the next coming generation. You have to be smart. So skills are the most things that are needed in humanity, that, you know, provide things like that. And to have information. I always advise people to just not end up Googling, but also ask people who have experienced this, who have knowledge about this. And yes.
And opportunities?
Yes, opportunities as well.
What kind of opportunities?
Network. You must have a strong network. Network, my dear. Network. What do I mean by that? If you see someone that, you know, this person has the same goal that you want and passionate about what you want, connect with that person and hold
your
on.
Tribe.
Yes, build. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Build it, because networking, now we are living with networking.
Right.
You understand me? And in that way, you become professional. You understand me? It builds trust. It's more like building a brand trust, it's also building trust with the people. So, skills, opportunities, and all that, yes, it is in there.
Amazing.
Just like Sune mentioned about superpowers.
Yeah.
Oh, we have superpowers. I'm not going to lie. We have superpowers as women. The fact that we are able to create something, we are so. We can even lift the mountains if it has to reach to that.
Right.
You see, because we are women, we are not sticking on one thing. I'm going to say this. If you want to be the better, right? The house that you're building, be the home of your house. I'm not going to explain that, but be the home of your house.
I want to quickly share something just to hook onto what you just mentioned. I know this is a long time ago, but in 2014, the Global Entrepreneurial Report came out.
Right.
And what was really fascinating to me was coming back to the power of Africa, but coming back to the power of women. The stats that I'm going to mention now was, where are the biggest number of early startup kind of entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs, okay?
Right.
80.6% of female entrepreneurs were positioned in Nigeria and Zambia. 80.6 in the world.
Wow.
The next level up or down, so we rather say, was America at only 10% and the UK at 5.5%.
Wow.
And yeah, maybe the listeners would ask, why is that? But when now we're talking about women and the power of women, these women, like so many other women in the world, and we all know women like that, their main commitment is to provide education for their children. And women are resilient. They're flexible, they're agile, they bounce back, they you know, find solutions, they don't have enough money. So these women were typical entrepreneurs. They started finding a whole or creating a whole lot of different small little businesses so that they can provide for their family.
Wow.
And to me, when it comes to, now we come back to social entrepreneurship again, you know, we love always saying the future is female. And what we mean by that is, if the world was designed by strong, confident women and girls, the world will be safer, it will be more inclusive, and people will actually be allowed to thrive, and nature will be allowed to flourish. So for me to look at something like resilience, agility and flexibility, those are some of the most powerful skills to have as an entrepreneur. And yet, not yet, but females, that's our superpower.
Yeah.
Women in general will always make a plan. It doesn't matter how hard the world knocks or life knocks them down, they will always find a plan and will always survive and come out on the other side. And I think that's our superpower.
That's so beautiful. And I think I can relate to that. I can absolutely relate to that.
If I look at all the women I have in my life,
right,
they always make a plan.
Yeah.
that the always find a solution, no it doesn't matter what.
Right, absolutely. And Nolita, I wanted to ask, you know, what is GIB doing to make this journey a little less challenging for young entrepreneurs? You know, it's very difficult to access, again, resources to start things like your own business. And aside from you know, just the business perspective, you mentioned self-development in as a core activity for the Girls in Business program. Tell us a bit more about what is Girls in Business doing for this entrepreneur, but not just the business side, but the human aspect of the entrepreneur.
All right. So this year, we were able to kickstart our monitoring and evaluation study, and this is our endeavor into understanding these young girls, right? What's happening? So one of the things we were looking at there was that where do they come from? And you know, how many of them come from, you know, child-led households? You know, so how many of them don't have parents?
Right.
And we found that more than 50% of the girls in the program come from single-parent households.
Wow.
So now we could already go into that rabbit hole and say, okay, so what are some of the challenges that we might face with young girls who come from such a situation? So there might be a challenge of identity. That's where personal development comes in. There might be traumatic experiences. And we have the honor of having partners who are equipped to deal with that. And I will specifically mention Amandla Development. They work on psychosocial services. So we have been able to refer one of our girls there. So our work doesn't end in the classroom. Through these surveys as well that we are doing, you know, at every session, we are also able to see what some of the challenges are. There is a challenge of resources getting to sessions. For this, we provide transport. So the girls are picked up and then they are also taken home again. So they come to our sessions. And then also the way in which we deliver content, we try to get people who are very knowledgeable in the subjects, right? So that we know for sure that the content that they are getting is good. And as mentioned, Sune is really spearheading our content department at the moment. And she explains concepts in such a way that anybody can understand it. The only task we sit with is translation, which is much easier. The people who are delivering the content are women as well, women who come from these backgrounds to these areas. We are also led by our head coaches and mentors who come from the same reality and context. So they are role models. There's a group of women. We are a tribe of women surrounding this young girl who's in grade 10, who just got into this program. She knows she can fall on any one of us. She knows that somebody is there. There's a sister. There are motherly figures here. There are, you know, there's so much diversity in this program that any girl has space. Any girl, and you know, and the only reason why we are having, you know, like there's a cap on the amount of girls we have in the program is simply because we ourselves are not resourced enough to cater for all girls.
Right.
But if we were able to do that, then we would like to reach any girl. But surprisingly enough as well, we have a lot of walk-ins in our sessions.
Wow.
So though we have a cap for 25 girls in phase two, we are sitting with around 40 girls in phase two. this year.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So and there's new faces every week as well.
That's amazing.
So our content is spreading.
Right.
Miami will go talk about it with her friends and then she'll come tag along with a friend.
Right.
Even in terms of mentors, there's a new mentor all the time. You know, while this poses some issues in terms of logistics, but on the other hand, if you look at it as a human, then you're like, wow, we are doing something good here. Hence, people are coming into this program.
The logistics is least of your problems.
Yes. So and then there's the Girls Resiliency Fund that we are also, you know, it still doesn't end in the classroom. We look beyond. What do you need beyond what we are giving you? How can we tap into our networks to give you that? And then we'll know that as well, in phase three as well, you know, there's a social media campaign, you know, where we also look into our own networks and see, oh, Miami, you're now flagging a problem or a challenge in your business. And then we will go look at our database, who could solve that for us, you know. So those are just some of the resources we give. But yes, there is a call to action from my side that if there are any stakeholders who think, you know, they are well equipped to partner with us, this is my call to action. Please come through.
Amazing.
And come through in any shape or form. We are not only looking for monetary partnerships, we are looking for operational partnerships. So if you are sitting there as a professional and you think that maybe if you're a psychologist, you think you want to spend an hour of your time on a Saturday coming to talk to our girls, we will also welcome that. So any help in any shape or form, we welcome all of that. So,
amazing. Yeah. And Sune, I want to go back to you. And, you know, this year I know that you've been particularly guiding us and in training our mentors and facilitators and also designing our masterclass sessions. Could you tell us a bit more about these masterclasses and what are the outcomes or learnings you are hoping for through these sessions?
First of all, it's such an exciting opportunity. I feel like I'm the luckiest girl to have this opportunity. And like Nolita was just saying, the transformation that you see in such a short time, you know, it's not your motivation. It's just like, I don't have words to explain it. So part of the masterclass, my masterclasses are at the beginning of the course. And I see my job more in the line of creating experiences for these girls where they have the opportunity to start looking at the world through different lenses. Opening up and start looking at the world through, instead of challenges and difficulties, but see opportunities, you know, all the way. So to create that experience, I always, when I approach something like this, I kind of gradually build the knowledge up, also in terms of how they start opening and start looking at the world around them. So there's one of my most amazing, well, famous video that I always kick start a process like this is Prince EA. He's a spoken word artist and an amazing human rights activist. But he has a video called Man Versus Earth.
Right.
It is such a bold video. So we kind of kick start the first masterclass with that. I mean, I have seen that video probably more than 50 times. And every single time I watch it, I get chill. It is, I've never grown tired of watching it. It's always bold. It's always wow. And I think for young people, it's like, okay, your heart starts racing. It's like this. And it really gives the most amazing backdrop to this girls and business journey. It really almost shakes them in their foundation to open up, to think bigger.
Right.
But also to identify what are the challenges we globally deal with in terms of climate change and poverty and all of those things. But he also creates a really very specific experience through that video for us to understand that everything and everyone are connected. And then, you know, so through the masterclass, I, for instance, deal with things like systemic thinking and the ripple effect for them to understand when they make a decision. They have to understand the ripple in the pond. We're actually going to deal with the ripple effect in the next masterclass, where they, you know, everybody, we kind of also related to what they have seen, you know, throwing a stone in the pond and the ripples that it creates, to kind of create the visual understanding of every single decision you make, also in your business. The business ideas that they're coming up with now, they have to make it very consciously and very mindfully.
Amazing. Wow. And lastly, do any of you have a few words of inspiration for young entrepreneurs that are starting out?
I think for me, what I would say is, is for everyone to have a spirit of resilience. This word we are using a lot in the NGO space: resilient programs, resilient people, resilient markets, resilient economies, resilient governments. And I think it's time now to really unpack what is the meaning of resilience.
Mm.
You know, resilience is getting out of bed even if you do not want to get out of bed. This is what resilience meant for me today. So flexibility in the definition of resilience, right? Resilience is being able to solve problems, the problems you're seeing in society. Having the resilience to say that I can do this, I will do this, I'm strong enough to do this.
Yeah.
Resilience is the spirit of being able to have conflict that is constructive. So conflict with people around you that doesn't break them, but conflict that brings you closer to solutions and strengthening the relationships you have.
Yes.
Wow.
So resilient relationships, resilient marriages, resilient relationships as mothers and fathers, as daughters and siblings, as all of these things, to apply resilience in our daily lives to say that I'm here, I'm strong, I'm a solid foundation for this relationship to thrive. I'm a solid foundation for this program to thrive. I'm a solid foundation for this podcast, this conversation, you know, everything. Thing just to unpack the definition of resilience in your life every day. So applying resilience more than speaking about it and using it as a buzzword is the spirit I want to encourage today.
Amazing. Sine?
What I would like to leave the listeners with is to find your tribe, build your tribe. I think it's very important, especially for girls, to have that sisterhood. Power in numbers, we are much stronger together. We can achieve way more together.
True.
So especially for the young people, especially for the teenagers, I know it's a difficult phase.
Yeah.
But you do have the power within you to be a change maker.
Right.
Believe in that power, believe in yourself, and create and build that tribe and start creating that change that you want to see.
Yes. Amazing. Wow. I think that takes me back. I think this is an African proverb that says, if you want to go far, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together.
Absolutely.
So, wow.
Comes back to Ubuntu again.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so, so much, ladies, for joining us today. It's been so amazing learning from each and every one of you. You've taught me so much that I will personally be taking back on my own social entrepreneurship journey. So, yeah. And that's it for today's episode of Real Talk with Orebi. A huge thank you to our guests, Nolita, Sune, and Miami, for sharing their insights and experiences. We hope you found this conversation as inspiring and enlightening as we did. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Orebi_South Africa to stay updated on upcoming episodes and the latest news from Orebi. Thank you.